Okay, let me know when you're ready.
I'm ready.
Mm-hmm. Good evening. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Welcome to the work study meeting. Today we will do budget presentation number one. Okay. Good evening, everybody. Thank you for joining us. We're going to take a moment to get the budget presentation up on the screen. We are looking tonight at budget presentation number five. And specifically tonight, we are going to be delving into the instructional codes, the technology codes, and the special education codes. Thank you, Mr. D'Amico. Okay, so we have Dr. Peter Daly here with us. And like I said, we're going into codes tonight that go over instruction, technology, and special education. I'm going to ask if someone can advance the slides. Another one. Perfect. Great. Okay, so as we all know, the current operating budget for the 2020-21 school year was approved by voters last May in the amount of $55,602,506,000 with a tax levy that came in at 2.8%. That was definitely a tax levy that was much higher than we're seeing this year. The proposed budget for next school year will again be a tax compliant budget, which we feel we do every year for our taxpayers. Excuse me, that is coming in to be adopted at $56,414,443. And that will be adopted at the April 12th, 2021 meeting. The good news tonight is we have a budget that is almost near cap. So we thank so many people who helped us, in-house, put the spending plan together based on, you know, the needs of our students. And you'll hear about some of those needs tonight. The budget-to-budget dollar increase, if you took this current year's adopted budget and next year's proposed budget, we're looking at a dollar-to-dollar increase of $811,937. And in the big scheme of things, that is not much. That equates to 1.46% budget-to-budget, okay? Every year we also plug into the formula appropriated fund balance. That is fund balance that is designated to offset the levy and help in the spending plan that the district puts together. So what we have done, we have appropriated $1.4 million again this year in appropriated fund balance. But let's take a look at the tax levy specifically. This year's tax levy for next year is at 1.28%. Levy to levy, that only means $563,250. So if we go to the next slide, this is the tax levy cap formula that every year Dr. Daly puts together. And at that bottom line, you'll see it highlighted in yellow. This year's tax levy cap is coming in at that number 1.28%. That includes all of the allowable reductions that we're allowed to put into the formula, such as pilot monies, prior year exclusions, the allowable growth factor, so on and so forth. And you've seen this slide over and over and over again, but that number is consistent right now. Dr. Daly, that is the tax levy at 1.28%, correct?
Yes, it is. And I just want to jump in because what this illustrates is the problem that people in my position have had in the tax cap here. The cap is 2% or lower, not 2% or higher, which is inherently unfair. There are situations where the change in the CPI was over 2, but we could only go up to 2. Now this year it's below 2, but you could certainly go below 2 if that's what your levy increase calculates out to. And that's ours this year. Just had to get that in.
Thank you. This slide is interesting. This slide really shows, if I could sum it up, it shows how the tax levy has really worked for residents over a 10-year period. On the left-hand side, you'll see the budget increase percentage over a 10-year period. And at that bottom left-hand line, you will see budget to budget, it's a $1.46 dollar-to-dollar increase. If you go to the middle line, that is the tax levy percent increase over the 10-year period. You'll see how each of those 10 years came in. And the bottom highlighted yellow box in the middle, there is next year's tax levy cap at 1.28. That is actually the lowest we've ever had in the last 10 years. And I think that deserves to be mentioned as we remain fiscally responsible to taxpayers out there. I think that's one thing that, we would definitely want taxpayers to know. This is the lowest tax levy increase over the last decade, okay? And then on the right-hand column you see there, we've had very consistent approval ratings over the last 10-year period. It shows you the positive approval ratings of the voting public from 2012-2013 through last May, and the percentage of yes voters.
So what you have on the screen is a typical Babylon, or I would say, for that matter, any school district on Long Island. This is the breakdown of expenditures, and the percentages would be consistent for the most part, district to district. In any school district, we are people-driven organizations. The bulk of our expenditures are in the areas of salaries and fringe benefits. And whether it be Babylon, West Hampton, or West Hempstead, that was pretty good, wasn't it? This slide would not look much different at all, because we all basically do the same thing. Our product is instruction that's done by teachers in front of a class and the support staff that's there to support them in carrying out their function. This slide, I can't make the same statement about the revenue side of things, because most of you know the composition of Babylon and Babylon's tax base. So in our district, we are considered in the eyes of the state above average in wealth. And correspondingly, our state aid reflects that. We receive, if you can see it here on the screen, approximately 17% of our total revenue is in the form of state aid. Now, if we weren't considered wealthy, that number would clearly be higher, maybe twice that number. But I'd say on Long Island, you know the makeup of the 124 school districts. I'd say Babylon is probably on the island closer to average than below average, when you look at the entire 124 school districts. But again, this is our revenue. We can't do much to change this. Roughly 80% of our revenue comes from the property taxpayers, both residential and non-residential. 17% comes from Albany. 1% comes from other income, which is, there's a variety of smaller groups that fall in there, the largest of which is the Babylon Village Library's repayment for the debt service for their bond issue that the taxpayers approved probably 8 or 9 years ago, maybe longer. And then the last 3%, as Mrs. Rossi alluded to, $1.4 million or 3% is in fund balance. This was the slide, I think, which was a little bit out of order, but if you want to comment on it, or would you like to?
No, this slide just reviews. Yep. Sorry. This slide just reviews the appropriated fund balance again. We have had a stable $1.4 million, I think, over the last 3 years of appropriated fund balance, also known as designated fund balance. But like I said, that offsets the revenue coming in next year's proposed budget. Okay, so these codes that you see here in front of you, these are the instructional component codes, and these codes make up those big pieces of the pie chart that Dr. Daly just reviewed. These are the instructional pieces to that pie chart, representing almost 71% of the budget. This current year's budget, the instructional components came in at a little over 23 million. Next year, we're going up a little over $600,000 among all instructional components. But if you had to sum up why we come to work every day for students, it's all of these many, many codes. This is the teaching and the learning avenue of what we put together, okay? So the bulk of your budget is going to be spent in these codes. So these codes represent all general education, instructional salaries, and longevity payments, K through 12. These are all of our instructors' salaries, contractual obligations that we pay out. It also represents all general education, non-instructional salaries. Again, anyone who deals with children on a daily basis who might not be teachers, but maybe they're nurses, maybe they're clerical workers or monitors, as well as their contractual longevity payments, K through 12. These codes also represent student services such as attendance, guidance services, school psychological, social work services, health services, anything coming out of those offices that go back to support students and their needs are coming out of the instructional codes. All supplies, materials, equipment, copy machines used for instruction, library materials, curriculum writing and development, training for our teachers, professional development workshops and service workshops, conferences. It also includes the monies that we need for substitutes, chaperones on trips, overtime needs, home instruction. Sometimes we have students who might need a couple of weeks of home instruction because of a medical issue. That all comes under the instructional codes. This next bullet is something that we pride ourselves on. That's the BOCES op-ed programs. We are a district that we feel, you know, very happy that we are able to send our students in 11th and 12th grade to the occupational educational programs offered by Western Suffolk BOCES. And sometimes Eastern Suffolk or Nassau if it's across contract. But we have students here who might want to, you know, spend half the day here and then go half a day to Wilson Tech, and maybe they want to study culinary or study HVAC or even go to flight school at Eastern Suffolk BOCES. We pride ourselves in offering those opportunities to Babylon students. And then finally, out of instruction comes, obviously, our extracurricular clubs and activities. We have a full slate of clubs and activities for next year, as we always have, as well as our summer school programs. Going into the technological component, the technological needs of the district have been a big focus for probably the last 4 or 5 years here in Babylon. 5 years ago, we had a goal of creating a world one-to-one computing initiative, more so than ever this year. It has really, really blossomed beautifully. And I will tell you, we are very, very fortunate that we had those one-to-one devices before this pandemic hit, because at least we had the devices even for the youngest kids ready to go to be deployed. Can't say that for a lot of districts which had to do orders into this past fall. So we were very fortunate in that sense. But there is a slight increase from the 2021 to the 21-22 school year in this area. And that is, I think I must credit that to our technology director and his department. They really do very well with their needs and their vision for how we move this along. So we have a five-year plan in technology where we are constantly turning over and getting, you know, devices that are new each year, and we release devices that are older. But the technological codes include all instructional technology salaries, including the salaries of our technicians. It includes all IT equipment and general supplies coming out of Mr. DeLeo's department. We have next year budgeted for MiFi devices. Also in this code come out all of the IT contracts that we have hold with vendors as well as BOCES. All software contracts, all BOCES fees, including being a member of the Microsoft Consortium, our, as I mentioned, the scheduled replenishment of one-to-one World Computing devices for every student K through 12. We also have planned for 1G connections, excuse me, at the high school and the grade school to take place this summer. Improved WAN support and being part of the Smart Learning Suite. So those are some of the things that the technology department has planned in their budget for next year. And then a big portion of the a school district's budget, I would probably say every district's budget, is the special education component. And here you see a slight increase of a little under $200,000, but this pays for so many needs of children that we service here in Babylon. Obviously, it's the in-house instructional and non-instructional salaries and longevity payments. Thank you. Tuition that we pay to approved and outside service providers. So if we send a student out to another approved special school or a school within any of the BOCES because of need, we must pay tuition to those schools, so that tuition comes out of these codes. Also paid out of these codes would be professional contracts and technological services, contracts for OT, PT, vision, hearing. These are all professional contracts that we go into partnership each year with various service providers. Also at the special education office, they have their own special education equipment, software needs, general supplies, and testing needs. So testing services, if we have to have specialists outside of the district do various tests, this is, you know, funded through codes coming out of the special education component. And then obviously the last thing would be the special education summer program, which we are also running again this year in-house, this summer. So next year's budget, we have a number of retirements. We have 5 teacher retirements, and we have it planned that all of those teachers' teaching positions will be replaced. We're not going down drastically in student count, and we want to continue offering our students programs that they deserve. So we're losing 5 teachers to intended retirement, and we plan on replacing 1 physical education teacher, 1 elementary teacher, 2 speech and language teachers, and 1 science teacher. This budget also includes 1 ENL teacher. We currently have a part-time person that we are making full-time next year based on students and their needs coming into the district. And we also have a part-time guidance counselor from this past year that we are making full-time. That's a pretty big increase. She right now is only 0.4. We're making that position a 1.0 FTE for next year to be at the grade school specifically. Okay. So those additions are in the budget. In addition, also in the budget is money to vet and purchase a K through six standards-based mathematics curriculum that is going to be technologically rich for parents and students to supplement, you know, the learning going on in the classroom. Before I go into these last slides with dates upcoming, do we have any questions from the board trustees regarding any aspects of staffing?
This is Hannah. Good evening. I just wanted to know, I know it might be a little early, but in terms of kindergarten numbers and section of kindergarten, is it the same number of sections as in terms, because I know we've had to fluctuate here and there. And does that include, you know, the, you know, when we look at one elementary teacher, is that the elementary teacher? So I just didn't know if we had any data yet.
We had quite a large elementary, you know, group of youngsters come in last summer where we had to add a section. We are keeping that added section in kindergarten. So that has no bearing on the replacement here.
We have five, is that correct?
We have, is it five?
We have, no, we have six right now in kindergarten, I believe. Right, Mr. D'Amico?
Yes.
Six.
Okay, so
that, that.
So it's planned for six this coming year?
That's the plan. Okay. Right now, now, if we see that the registration numbers, which is not the case, the registration numbers are pretty vibrant and hefty right now. But if we go into the late summer, we really, you know, wouldn't need a section, then we would have to adjust. But, you know, kindergarten is something, you know, kindergarten grades one and two and three, four, five, and six. I mean, and even up here, you know, we want to keep nice low class sizes. And I think that's one of the things that Babylon has done very well over the years is championing those low class sizes, especially at the K-12 building.
Okay, you know? I just want to make sure it was budgeted for. Thank you.
Yes.
Mrs. Donaldson?
I'm not sure if this is working.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
First of all, thank you so much for all of the details. I think it's really important. Mrs. Rossi, to piggyback on your comment about the small class sizes, I would say that of all the years, to be really cognizant of that, next year is the year. Our children are going to need small class sizes, all the way up K through 12, because of the last year and a half and how their learning environment has been altered. So thank you for paying attention to that. I also had a question because I'm not seeing, and maybe I'm missing it. Can we discuss bringing back an assistant principal at the junior senior high school? Thank you.
Definitely, great question. That is a conversation for the board. I would recommend we would. That's a discussion that maybe we can have here this evening.
So that kind of piggybacks on a question that I had. So I'm going to ask the question and then we can maybe have that discussion. So my question, one of them was, do we have any money designated for possible COVID-related instructional concerns? I know we're planning for a normal opening, but we don't know what's going to happen. And seeing what our staff had to do this year with schedules and contact tracing and seating arrangements and busing at the lower level, there was a lot that we didn't expect to have when we removed our vice assistant principal. So my first question can wait till later. You know, the instructional money is for COVID related things, but to me, having help here, if we have those things on top of other concerns and testing and just normal day-to-day operations, I think it might be something we revisit.
Sorry. Yeah, no, I would say I agree for all those reasons. I think next year, as Mrs. Donaldson said, is really going to be a challenge on many levels. And so we're really going to need all hands on deck. And I think, you know, adding an AP would be a prudent move.
Well, yeah, I just wanted to, could you tell me why the guidance counselor in the grade school, we're bringing that to a full-time position?
So I think actually similar to what Ann was speaking.
Can you just put your mic on? Thank you.
I think in part similar to what Ms. Donaldson was talking about in terms of the effect of COVID on our students.
in conjunction with, there is now a requirement for a grade school or for an elementary guidance counselor. We've been doing it with a 0.4. And so the problem when you're trying to do that is twofold. There's 0.6 of the day where they can't be responsible for anything related to guidance. They could basically get to sixth grade, which technically is one of the most important grade to get to in elementary school. That's where it's required now. So a sixth grade student has to have a guidance counselor listed on their transcripts, just like our 7th through 12th students. The problem with trying to maintain a 0.4 is that they're always going to be looking for a full-time position. That's number one. Number two, I think her having a 0.4 there now has demonstrated the need for it. She really does have a full day of work available to her that she cannot do. Some of that is, I think, exasperated by the conditions under which our students are living right now, no doubt. Some of that, I think, is just the way those grade levels have changed. So we do see more students who are coming in with issues related to social emotional learning, whether it's stress or anxiety. We do see issues within the grade levels having to do either with discipline or other behavioral things. So there is a justification to have somebody there full time. Having somebody there half or part time, we have in there 0.4, we're going to be in a position where we're just always needing to look for that. A full time person can then be between the two buildings. I think there's justification then to have them doing some work down in the K2 building and the 3-6 as well. That building used to have a guidance counselor, full-time guidance counselor, who was moved up to the junior senior high school when we employed the director of guidance. So they've been without one for that time.
Can I just ask a follow-up then? So is there a 0.6 somewhere that individual is doing now that they're not going to be doing?
No, what we do with part-time people like that, we had done that with the E&L person as well. And that position is purely driven by numbers. The E&L position is just, do you have enough personnel to cover the standalone and inclusive classes? And the answer is no, we needed to bump them up. But what we've done, what we've always done is if we hired somebody for part-time, like 0.4 or 0.6, the remainder of their day is filled in a substitute position. What was happening with this person, it's part of what has indicated the need, the person who's currently holding that part-time guidance counselor position was needed for the full day, but can't do it contractually. So we have to keep her back from doing it.
Okay, thank you very much. Mrs. Nassi?
Thanks.
I have a question getting back to the AP, and this is a genuine question, not a suggestion. Would it ever make sense to have a shared AP position between the grade school and the high school? Would that be too much for one person?
Personally, I think it's too much for one person. You know, if we look at... You know, the grade school has been full-time since September. They have a full AP down there. That person is the only level of assistance that Mr. Goldberg really has. Up here, too, with students being back now, all full-time, we have a full building, especially when the 9th, 10th, and 11th graders come in a few weeks. Yes, we do have directors up here and we have a guidance department, but once we have, you know, the full building again and state testing coming up, and it gets busy. I mean, if you're asking my opinion, I think we should have a full-time assistant principal here at this building, as well as the grade school, only because of the nature of the ages of the children, the social emotional needs, the state testing that's going on, the level of, classroom visitations that have to be done through APPR now. Yeah.
Thank you.
Mrs. Juris?
This is anonymous.
Yeah,
that's not weird. Just if you could clarify the kindergarten. So I remember last year we had to last minute add a teacher because it's a year surprise. Say those classes are really small. I mean, we're not going to have a class of 10 at that level. Like, if what's like, how are we planning? Do we know approximately how many kids are coming in?
It's sometimes difficult to know the incoming kindergarten class. We use the long-range planning surveys, you know, based on demographic information we've gathered, you know, the birth rate, you know, the reports that BOCES does for us, but they're never 100% accurate. We have been finding that more and more families are registering in late August. And that's just island-wide, that's just a phenomenon. So we try to plan liberally so we're not caught off guard. So with that being said, you know, last year we did have to add, and I think we added a section fairly early in the summer, if you remember. We were giving you registration counts from July on, I think almost every week, so we could see and really monitor, right, those incoming kindergarten registrations. But it really is where we have to monitor it, you know, in the summer. But we feel right now with the level of sections we have budgeted, we're confident we're in good shape. Can that change? Yes. We just don't know.
Mrs. Donaldson?
Thank you. So if we were looking to bring an assistant principal to the junior senior high school, obviously there's a cost involved. So where do we find the dollars if this is our desire?
Well, we're going to have to go back to the drawing board and find the dollars. But we do have a level of state aid that still will be coming in after the adoption of the April 1st state budget, which is around the corner. Dr. Dilley, do you want to add in your comments on that?
You sure you want them? you'll find it the same way you found it for the kindergarten teacher. It will come from fund balance, unless you're going to make cuts in something that's already in this budget. The budget that's presented to you tonight is, as the superintendent alluded to, is a tax cap compliant budget, meaning that all sides of the scale, the revenue and the expenditure sides, balance. So if you were now going to add to that expenditure side $150,000, where are you going to get $150,000 in revenue to balance the scales? So again, it would be the type of thing where you have to go back and look more closely at those things that are in the budget to see if you couldn't find some savings that came close to that amount, or a combination of added revenue and reductions in expenses to the total of maybe $150,000, $160,000.
So
we've done it before.
That includes the person's benefits, keep that in mind.
And absolutely.
So with the five retirements, we're replacing them, the difference in cost from existing staff to new staff, does that cover it?
Yeah, that's been factored in already.
That's been factored in already. So I just want to get back to the question I asked before. Is there any room for, if we have COVID instructional expenses next year, what would happen with that? And to piggyback with that, and it's my foggy memory, so you're gonna have to help me, but I thought we had to increase some of our art, music, and tech positions at the elementary school and grade school due to COVID. So what's happening with those positions? Are they staying the same?
No, those positions are not staying the same. That was a one-year COVID relief hire or addition that we planned for. I will tell you, I think districts are planning for a normal return in September not, you know, looking at the social distancing that currently exists. We don't know if the governor will come down and say that we have to have virtual options. We're hearing not. We're hearing most likely not. I think, so I can just tell you what we're hearing. Until it happens, we don't know. So that's a very difficult question to answer.
I kind of just wanted that out there, that what the chatter is and, you know, what districts are planning for. It's just important to put it out there that we're hearing, it probably will not be.
I will tell you, districts are bellyaching that they cannot promote budgets with all of these unfunded mandates like we had this year. So I think you have advocacy groups now representing districts that are going to be, you know, sharing that message. Either increase the state funding that we need or get back to normal.
Okay, thank you for that. Does anyone else have questions?
I did just one final, and I know we don't know for sure, we don't have a magic wand or crystal ball, but knowing that the state is supposed to be getting some more funds because of the relief package, do we have any sense of if, have you heard anything, is the state budget perhaps, are we going to get more than originally planned?
That's a great question. We actually do hear that we're getting more, but to be fiscally conservative, you don't want to spend it all in 1 year. So again, we don't know how much would be coming our way, and it might be a lot more than we ever anticipated. It might not be, but if it is more, we just have to be very careful that we don't just, you know, upfront everything.
Can I just add to that, because it's something that a lot of people in our positions are fearful of, and that is that this influx of money is coming from the federal level, not the state level. How it is treated by the state can have significant consequences on school districts a year or two out. Will it supplement or will it supplant? If it supplants what we were supposed to get from the state, that is a one shot. That's going to go away. And then what is the state going to do to backfill that? The state might show in 3 years an increase of 3%, but it's 3% on an amount that was reduced by everything we got from the federal government as part of the stimulus package. So we have to be careful with that, because that's something that, you know, while it certainly is welcome news, how it's treated and how it's presented needs to be approached with some caution because of what it might set us up for down the road.
Thank you. Any further questions? All right, so do you want to finish the slide and we'll open it up for questions? Great.
Okay, so very quickly, April 1st, as we know, is the adoption of the state budget. We're hoping it's an on-time adoption. One thing the governor always prides himself on is the on-time adoption of a state budget. So we anticipate it will be on April 1st. And then the board will adopt our proposed budget for next year on April 12th. So the April 12th budget meeting will be an adoption presentation followed by the official vote for adoption. And these just give you the dates: April 12th, 7:30 p.m., final budget presentation and adoption. May 10th, 7:30 p.m., the annual budget hearing and presentation. And then our vote will be an in-person vote this year back at the Babylon High School East Gymnasium on May 18th from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m., taking into account all of our community members who work and can get back in time to vote on the school budget and trustee election. So that is good. We will be having an in-person vote.
Absentee ballots also be available?
Yes, they are. But we are not obligated to mail them out to every resident this year. But you can definitely give the district clerk's office a call for that.
Mrs. Pesci, are we ready to? Okay. So we will now take questions from visitors. The Zoom will be open for the raise hand feature. Please state your name.
Desiree Hawkins?
Yeah, Aspen on mute, if I click that one.
I am.
Okay. We have Parkins. You can unmute. It says Desiree Parkins, you can unmute. Okay. Maybe we have a problem there. Okay, try again. Yeah.
Anyone else?
Anyone else?
Anyone?
Just use the raised hand feature. Okay, go ahead.
Mrs. Campagna.
Good evening, everybody. This is Mrs. Campagna. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Dr. Daly, as usual, I'm following your numbers or trying to. So I would like to revisit how I know a lot of the board members were just asking about the additional teachers, but our current year, every grade from K through six had one extra teacher. So I don't know if that was budgeted last year already in your salaries and now you've just already included that, or was that part of a COVID line with an anticipation, and how then is that affecting our current year budget? So for example, the kindergarten, we talked about how they had six classes. They really had seven this year. First grade had six, usually has five.
That's right. So the question is that, yes, we had six in-person sections, one virtual on each grade level. And those virtual sections were emergency COVID. They came under an emergency, plan because after the budget was passed last May, we were not anticipating offering virtual sections on every grade level. That was by request from the state level.
Yeah, I would say that there were a number of different types of expenditures that we incurred once the school year started that we had not been able to anticipate because obviously we didn't know what we were going to be up against when we started the school year. That really speaks to the overall challenge that we have almost every year. But this year, obviously, it was magnified tenfold. One of the things that was really a saving grace to some extent was the fact that the people that we had, and correct me if I'm wrong, my curriculum people on my right and left, was that these were not the teachers that were working in these additional capacities were not paid per the actual contract. They were paid more like COVID teachers. They were paid a prorated salary without the fringe benefit costs. Those people are not in the budget next year. I don't think we could possibly present the budget, a responsible budget to the taxpayers that was trying to anticipate and duplicate what's in place this year. We could certainly not do that and stay within the tax cap limit that we were afforded this year of 1.28%. Anything like that would require an override, piercing the cap with a supermajority vote, and I don't think that's something anyone around the table would want to entertain. So I hope that answers your question.
Yes, it does. So will we ever be seeing exactly how much the school district spent in these emergency COVID funds? I mean, it's been a question before on previous meetings, and I know you always do your analysis budget to budget, but when do we ever actually see what the school district spent? Is that only me looking at the audited financial statements, or do you actually ever say we budgeted for, $23 million of salaries last year, and we're budgeting $23 million this year, but oh, by the way, last year, I mean, obviously you can't tell me last year yet because it's not done. It ends in June 30th. But when do you tell us you actually spent what you budgeted?
Well, that number, what we spent versus what we actually budgeted, will be determined as of June 30th.
Right.
Contract salaries, I can project contract salaries through the end of the year, but there are other expenses that go into salary codes that I can't determine right now. So I would say if it's a number that someone wants to use to rely on with 100% certainty, it wouldn't be until we closed out the fiscal year and actually our audit was complete. But you know, when we move forward and when I project based on what we have in place this year and what we anticipate needing. That for the most part is pretty accurate. You know, someone's working this year and we know that person's coming back next year. So they follow a salary schedule and that's relatively easy. That's almost like the flip of a switch, to be quite honest with you. The only instructional salary area that has some, I'll have to use it because I can't think of a better word, volatility, is in the area of special education, where we are evaluating the IEPs right now through the end of the year for existing students, and they may change for next year. They may require a different model that may be more or less costly, but yet we have to build and adopt the budget now. In addition to that, we may have students that come in that kindergarten class that may have some needs, and we have to satisfy them. And we don't know what they are right now, but yet we have to build, adopt, and present to you and the other residents of the community a budget that they have to vote on the third Tuesday in May for a school year that starts in September. So, you know, there needs to be flexibility in this budget. I wish, you know, we could budget with more certainty, but that's not the nature of what we do.
Very, very much understood. I just want to thank you for considering upgrading the guidance counselor from a 0.4 to a point to a full time. I know this was also addressed last year. And I know, so at the elementary school, I know Mrs. Bajamuzo oftentimes takes a role that may be a little bit more hands-on. And at the grade school, I know it's a little hard with having a part-time, and it'll be nice to have a full-time person at those two.
I have to interrupt you for a minute. Just don't make, if you cannot, please mention staff member names. Sorry about that.
Okay, so I'm just happy that that has been upgraded. I believe that's a position the state has been requiring, and I know that we had dropped down, and I wasn't sure if that was, I know that that had been addressed last year about the drop down. I guess that I will take care of getting, I have not been able to find the financial, the audited financial statements on our webpage. Is that something that I have to foil to see?
Negative. They should, if you go on the web page, you go to Board of Ed, you go to committees, and then you go to audit. The financial statements, the management letter, they're all on the website. In fact, you got me even wondering, but I'll check them. They're on the web page. They should be. If you have a chance to check it now, go to the Babylon homepage.
The only thing I see is the annual risk assessment update pertaining to the internal controls.
Well, if it's not on there, it will be up there by 10 a.m. tomorrow.
Okay. I had asked at a previous meeting, Mrs. Razi, for the bus analysis that had been done. I don't remember off the top of my head what that had been called. And you had referred to it being on the website. I was not able to find that either.
Okay. I will email you tomorrow morning.
Okay.
All right. I'll get on there and I'll direct you where to go.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Any other community questions? Just use the raise hand feature. Okay. We have a Roberts.
Hi, Cynthia Roberts, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I just have a quick question about the travel restriction, if that's okay.
Sure, go right ahead.
From your letter on Friday, I'm not sure if I'm interpreting it correctly. I know that Cuomo changed the travel restriction, but according to your letter, you don't have written approval yet. Is that correct?
Yes, that's what school districts are being told. We are waiting for written confirmation coming from the state agencies, whether it's the governor's office, solidifying those details that he verbalized at a press conference, or through the New York State Department of Health. That's what we're being told, that we have to get that written confirmation from those agencies first.
Okay, and if that is not given before Friday, if it's possibly done the week after, I don't know if the whole state takes the break at the same time, then we still need to test before traveling to New York and then quarantine and then test after.
Yeah, you got it. That's unfortunately what our school attorneys are telling us. Until the districts receive that all in writing, that the actual current restrictions are in place, believe it or not.
Yes. And if that happens during the break, would we be notified about that?
The minute we hear something, we will let everybody know.
Okay, thank you. I just want to make sure I'm in compliance. Thank you.
Okay, any last budget-related questions? Okay, seeing no further questions, we will move to... Mrs. Nowacki, you want to take the lead on this?
Sure, so I...
Turn your microphone.
Sorry, I forgot.
Okay.
I drafted a letter that we could possibly send to Schuber, Gillibrand, and Garbarino, expressing our displeasure about the Fed's requirement for the testing and asking them to please encourage them to grant us a waiver. So we have this here.
Thank you. Thank you for putting pen to paper and taking the lead on this.
Oh, my pleasure.
Very much so. It's a well-crafted letter. And you can read it right now. Tell us what you think.
And if the board is willing to, we don't need to vote on it, but we'd like to discuss if this is something that you would like us to send out on your behalf.
I want to interrupt. I'm good with sending it out.
Thank you, Mrs. DeLorme. Anyone else?
Yeah, I think that this is an important piece of advocacy, especially I haven't read some of the state memos and guidance that have come down, and I think it's nothing but double talk from them. And I think the whole thing is just nonsense, that we're going to give tests that don't count, but take them, but get a waiver and get an exemption. I think it's ridiculous. So I think this advocacy is important. Thank you, Mrs. Noesi, for taking the lead on this.
Thank you, Mrs. Donaldson. Anyone else? So I'm okay with this as well. I think it's a very important step. I also think it's important for our community as a whole to get in touch with our local and state and federal elected officials when problems come up related to COVID, related to schooling. There are a lot of things that local boards and local governments are tied to that frustrate us as well. So this is a great example on how to petition our elected officials. So thank you very much. Okay, so that is our last little piece of business. Our future next board meeting is our regular business meeting on Monday, April 12th, where we will do the budget presentation and adoption of budget and property tax report card. Following that, we will have a work study meeting on April 26th. May I have a motion to adjourn? Mrs. DeLorme, seconded by Mrs. Jervis. All in favor? 7-0. Thank you, everyone. Have a great night.